from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. It's been about a year since Gabe Gore left his job at the Dowd Bennett Law Firm to become St. Louis's circuit attorney. Governor Mike Parson appointed Gore to the post after Kim Gardner resigned amid bipartisan criticism and outrage over her management of the circuit attorney's office. Gore entered public life with a huge backlog of warrant applications and some lingering questions about whether he could turn around a circuit attorney's office that was well acquainted with turmoil. During a press conference with reporters on Thursday, Gore said there had been much progress, including hiring more assistant circuit attorneys and reducing a homicide case backlog. Gore added that his staff managed to have a functioning warrant office again and reduced the backlog of warrant applications from around 6,700 to around 2,600.
We want to live in a city that is safe. We want to go about our daily activities feeling secure. We want to pursue our dreams in this city and be safe in doing so. As long as I continue to serve as circuit attorney, I will spend every single day striving to make the city of St. Louis safer and a more just community.
After yesterday's press conference, Gore sat down with me in his office at the Carnahan Courthouse to talk about his takeaways from his first year as circuit attorney and what he hopes to accomplish next. First of all, Mr. Circuit Attorney, thank you for your time this morning. What's been the biggest surprise you've encountered in 1 year on the job?
The biggest surprise for me, because it was something that I simply hadn't considered, is that, you know, at the end of the day, this is a law office. It has operations that are necessary in terms of managing the finances of the offices, the budgets, making sure that the office has the resources it needs to operate and those kind of things. And I hadn't considered that those office operation issues were also in disarray in terms of grant management and things like that. So that was has been a lot of work that has been necessary that I really hadn't considered at all before I accepted the appointment and came to the office. In retrospect, I probably should have anticipated that.
So can you talk a little bit about the backlogs that you encountered, both with the warrant office and the homicide cases?
So with respect to the warrant office, I think it's been well documented. At the point that I was appointed initially, the estimates were that we were dealing with a backlog of 4,500 unreviewed applications for warrants. Once we were in the warrant office and began really analyzing what existed, we learned that, in fact, it was more like 6,700 applications for warrants that had not been reviewed. So that obviously was a major issue and something we had to address right away. We quickly identified that the most important thing with respect to those applications and warrants were to get through and review all of the serious violent felonies that had not been reviewed. When I was appointed, I made it very clear that aggressively prosecuting violent crime was going to be a focus of my administration. So in attacking the backlog, we prioritized looking at the violent felonies that had not been reviewed and no charging decisions had been made. We identified 9 homicides that had not been reviewed. We reviewed those and made charging decisions. In addition, there were hundreds and hundreds of serious violent felonies like rapes, assault firsts, carjackings, crimes of that sort that had not been reviewed. And we made the point of reviewing those and making charging decisions right away. What we found was that in the number of instances, you had repeat offenders in those cases, people who had been charges had been applied for, say, on a robbery 1 week, and the application for a warrant went unreviewed. The person was released within 24 hours, after 24 hours as required by law, and they might pick up another robbery case 3 or 4 weeks later, and that process would repeat itself. We did encounter a number of instances of that.
So where are the backlogs for both the homicide cases and the warrant office at this point in time?
So at the point that I was appointed, we had 250 homicides pending. As compared to historical norms, you know, historically in the circuit attorney's office, that number has been anywhere between 100 and 115. So we were roughly double what is the historical norm in terms of homicides pending. That 250 case number, of those, we have now, in my year in office, resolved approximately 70 of those. But at the same time, we've indicted homicides at a more rapid rate. So the number now stands at 237.
So with these backlogs we've just talked about, how often was it that you came across a case that had been in the backlog for so long that it was basically impossible to prosecute it, either because like a witness wasn't available anymore or the statute of limitations have run out? Like, it seems that even though you did quite a bit of work to try to relieve all this, there could have been instances where somebody committed a crime and may have been able to get away with it just because it was sitting around for a long time. How often did that happen?
Well, you know, there's a saying among lawyers that no case gets better with time, and that is pretty much true across the board. And we certainly have encountered a lot of difficulties prosecuting very old cases. And chief among those difficulties is usually witness availability. That's been a big problem.
What is your office doing to make sure that you never produce a backlog to the level that we've just described ever again?
Well, we are staying current on all of our cases, you know, in terms of making charging decisions on applications for warrants from day one. You know, I said to my team, you know, the first rule when you find yourself in a ditch is to stop digging. So let's make sure, no matter what, we're staying current on newly submitted applications for warrants. So we've been doing that, and we will continue to operate that way. In addition to that, in terms of just handling our cases, that's all about just keeping the office staffing levels at an appropriate level, making sure people are properly trained, and doing your job effectively. You know, what I've emphasized with all of my assistant circuit attorneys and everyone in the office is that we want the goal to be excellence in everything we do. And if you go about each day pursuing that standard, you're going to be effective, and you're going to be, you know, you're going to keep your case loads where they need to be.
So I understand that, like, people become prosecutors or even public defenders for reasons that are separate from money. They do it because it's a passion of theirs. But especially in the legal profession, there is like an outsized difference between working in the public sector and the private sector. And it seems like if you want to keep people for the long haul, you have to provide some financial incentives for them to stay. So how challenging is that now that you're in this role of being able to hire people, but like giving them a living in this office to where they could stay longer than just a couple of years?
So that's a huge challenge. And, you know, I'm someone who has been in the private sector and the public sector, and I can confirm for you that you're right. It doesn't pay the same. Now, if you're in our office, you're not in this to make money. That's not your primary driver. So we're never going to be competitive with the private sector on salary. And that's something that I think everyone who works here accepts. But where we have to be competitive is we've got to be competitive with neighboring prosecuting attorneys' offices. in the Gardner administration, I know they lost a lot of assistant circuit attorneys to the St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney's Office for a number of reasons, but one of those reasons, I'm sure, was the pay differential. We've lost, you know, we've been fortunate to have low attrition since I've been here. But even since I've been here, you know, I can think of at least a couple of attorneys that, no, three attorneys who have left and have gotten significant pay increases to go to neighboring prosecuting attorneys' offices.
This episode was edited by Aaron Dorr. Produced, recorded
by Jason Rosenbaum.
This episode was recorded by Maya Norfleet.
Podcast designed by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.